Welcome to our Blue Papers podcast edition. Blue Papers are our version of white papers here at Foreign Print. They cover a wide range of business topics, all with an aim to help your organization succeed. This is episode number 168, How to Start a Business. This episode is presented by Foreign Print Incorporated customer service manager, Brandon Manthey.
How to start a business. Starting your own business can be one of the most exhilarating life experiences. It can also be the scariest. When you're good at something or have what you believe is the next best product, hanging your own shingle may be the best way to go. Yet, along with it comes a bit of fear about making it on your own. Those fears are not unfounded. The truth is, 9 out of 10 startups fail. A new business may not stick around for the long haul for many reasons or a combination of the same. Competition may play a big role. More than 50% of restaurants and retail stores, as well as those in direct sales and consulting, did not make it to their 5-year anniversary. What can you learn from the 10% of businesses that do make it? It turns out that successful businesses have very similar characteristics, from the personality of its owners to the business practices that are carried out day to day. This podcast will outline the character traits needed to succeed as a business owner and what you must take into consideration, including the marketability of your product, before you even dip your toe into entrepreneurial waters. It will provide tips on developing a budget and raising the required funds to get your startup off the ground. It will describe the considerations of starting a business while still employed at your full-time job. Finally, it will assist you in finding resources both online and in your community that will guide you when you need help. Before you begin, let's find out. Are you cut out to own a business? According to the Ewing Marion Kauffman Foundation, 476,000 U.S. businesses were started every month in 2013. That may sound like a lot, but in reality, very few people start businesses. In fact, that monthly total translates to 280 people in 100,000, or 0.28%. It takes a specific type of individual to take such a big leap in life. Typical assumptions about entrepreneurs are that they have type A personalities, earned high grades in college, and likely came from corporate management and are now looking to make big money. Those assumptions don't fit many of today's entrepreneurs. Some are introverts. Nearly one-third never even went to college. Most are not in it for the money. Rather, they have a passion for what they do and can visualize how their product or service can make a difference. Overall, however, entrepreneurs share common personality traits. The list of descriptors for successful entrepreneurs can get long, but Joe Robinson of Entrepreneur Magazine boiled the list down to 7 in a January 2014 article. They are tenacity, passion, tolerance of ambiguity, vision, self-belief, flexibility, and rule-breaking. Essentially, Robinson said entrepreneurs have to adapt when markets change and must handle uncertainty and possible failure, from small weekly mishaps to the possibility that the business may not exist someday. They must also be visionary. Entrepreneurs are the people who see opportunity and not only grasp it, but also communicate their vision to family, investors, customers, and staff. It's not just any communication, but persuasive communication that will allow others to see what you see, according to the U.S. Small Business Administration. Persuasiveness, or the ability to sway others' opinions, is just one of the traits the SBA says an entrepreneur needs. Another is negotiation. Negotiation skills are needed for a variety of reasons, from signing a lease on an office space to agreeing to a rate you will charge for your services. The art of negotiation keeps business costs as low as possible, so funds are available when needed most. Finally, it's true that plenty of introverts are successful business owners. However, those who are more reserved than others still must have a solid set of networking skills. These skills are valuable when pitching a business idea to potential investors or when inspiring prospective team members who must agree to follow along on this uncharted journey. Once you've determined that you have the skills and characteristics needed to start a business, the next consideration must be your product or service. First and foremost, your product must be right for the market in which you're trying to sell. Like Paul B. Brown says in a Forbes commentary, if the dogs don't like the dog food, it's bad dog food. In other words, you only know whether the dog likes the product when it's feeding time. And at that point, you can't force it to eat. Likewise, you can't make your customer like your product, no matter how much you believe in it. Just as dogs may be picky about their food, customers are picky about the products they buy. And putting more money into marketing the product or discounting the price won't heighten customers' desire for the product. According to a survey of failed startups, 42% of those entrepreneurs said lack of a market need for their product caused them to close their doors. Steve Toback, a managing partner with the Silicon Valley-based Invisor Consulting, says new products or services have to solve a problem. Along with that, they need to offer a better solution than others are providing. It may take several tries to get the right product into the market you wish to serve. Here's what you should consider as you hypothesize and test the market. First, don't judge your product on a handful of early adopters. You may have early success with a few people. However, if you find that it's difficult to attract more customers, or that you're spending more on acquiring customers than you are charging, you may need to retool your product or service. Along with that, decide in advance how long you are willing to wait to achieve success. When that time frame arrives, take the lessons you've learned and rework the product. And last, ask yourself, would you or a family member use your product? If family members would not use it or don't understand its value, you may not be communicating it clearly, or you are not solving a problem. And then there's planning. Benjamin Franklin once said, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. That's true for startups. A great number of startups go out of business because their owners did not develop or follow a business plan. Chris Baskerville, a Forbes contributor who has experienced personal business insolvencies, said a business plan should look much like a family vacation plan, from concept to basic planning and down to the details. Unfortunately, startup entrepreneurs often stop planning after the concept stage, Baskerville says. He suggests the business plan help answer the following questions. Why are you in business? What need are you satisfying? Why has it not been done before? Why can you deliver a better result than your competition? And how will you obtain your first mover advantage? Quite often, investors who are considering putting funds toward a startup will require a business plan. Keep these points in mind when writing for investors. Number one, keep it brief. Entrepreneurs are passionate, often wanting to expound on their business dreams. Instead, the business plan should be succinct, providing a clear pathway towards success and how you plan to get there. Number two, be thorough. Entrepreneurs must show that they have thought of every detail. In addition to describing the basics of the product and its market, a plan should include how you are going to produce the product, a description of the team, even if it's a team of one, and projected profits. And number three, be unique. Numerous business plan templates are available online, but don't let a cookie-cutter approach keep you from showing the uniqueness of your business. Think of your business plan as a resume and write it for the audience. Intrigue investors and make them want to hire you. The final step of your business plan is projecting financials, in other words, income and expenses. By writing your business plan, you should know the available opportunities, your customer, the price of your product, and your competition. These will all help develop a financial forecast. It's easy for new entrepreneurs to love their idea or product so much that they think the numbers will follow. Don't let that happen to you. Instead, love the numbers. Forecasting a budget will take time, but it's time well spent. Startup costs are defined as the costs incurred before the business realizes any income. It is sometimes difficult to estimate how much money you will need to launch a startup. The SBA says some entrepreneurs need as little as $3,000 to start a business, while many businesses need $30,000 or more to get off the ground. Startup costs may include market research, costs in locating and securing an office, advertising and marketing, staff training, wages, professional consult fees to lawyers and accountants, and capital expenditures like inventory or vehicles. Be careful not to underestimate expenses. To be safe, you should double initial estimates for marketing, as they generally are higher than new business owners project. triple estimates for licensing, insurance, and legal fees because they are simply too difficult to predict if you've never been in business. And if you're starting as a sole proprietor, keep track of your time conducting direct sales and customer service. This will help forecast future costs should you add staff to conduct these functions in the future. New business owners have lofty sales goals, and that's great. But it means you should do two projections, one that assumes your dream sales projections, and another that is more conservative. The first will keep you motivated. The second will give greater assurance that your business will be here long into the future. If the numbers are not working in your favor, consider ways to cut or share costs. The Small Business Association suggests co-working or shared office spaces, as well as cloud-based solutions that can replace software licenses. Entrepreneur John Brandon has specific online and cloud-based tools he uses in his business. He uses online interfaces for accounting to email invoices, run reports and manage expenses, tracking project tasks, conducting online discussions, managing social media platforms, storing data, including business reports and marketing literature, and taking notes on bits of knowledge you gain, contacts, and reminders. You may not need all of these tools, or you may find others that work for you. The trick is to find ways to simplify and streamline your business operations so you can focus on the big tasks of producing a product and selling it. The cost of marketing is one of the more difficult financial predictions to make. That's because determining a marketing budget is not definitive and often is based on several factors. The most common way to determine a marketing budget is to base it on a percentage of sales. In practice, marketing budgets range from 1 to 30% of sales, and most fall below 10%. According to a study of the Chief Marketing Officers Council, 58% of respondents said they spend less than 4% of sales revenue. Only 2% spend more than 20% of the sales budget. If you plan to base your marketing budget on sales, you should consider the following. Number one, sales volume. In general, the higher the volume of sales, the lower the percent of sales is spent on marketing. Number two, is your product new or established? A new product or new product line may take as much as 20% of sales for marketing. Established products generally require a lower spend. And number three, brand awareness. If the market isn't familiar with your company or your product, you'll need to spend a higher percentage of sales on marketing efforts. The drawback of basing a marketing budget on percentage of sales comes to light during months or quarters when sales are slow. With a decline in sales comes a decline in the marketing budget, yet this may be the time when you need marketing the most. Another option for budgeting marketing expenses is to allocate a percentage of your total budget. As a guideline, startup businesses should allocate 20 to 30% of total budget to marketing in the first and second years of business. If you're buying an established business, 7 to 10% of your budget should be adequate. And then there's fundraising. Startups often run out of cash. Avoid this by raising the necessary funds at the start and budgeting wisely as you go. Baskerville stresses the need for daily cash flow when he says, having only 95% of necessary capital to start your business is not enough. You need 100%. Funding can come from traditional sources, or you can find creative ways to finance your venture. First, you can stay close to home and look at your personal resources. Besides dipping into a savings account, you may sell assets like a car or a boat. You also could take out a home equity loan or open a business credit card. Warnings come with each of these options, however. If your business fails, you may risk home foreclosure when using a home equity loan as financing. Having a line of credit may be the riskiest way to fund a startup because the financing does not go away if you cannot pay the card off, and interest rates can skyrocket quickly. Friends or family members may be willing to offer no-interest or low-interest loans without the hassle of bank contracts. The risk here is harming a relationship if you are late on payments or unable to pay the loan back. Small business loans are available through banks, although they are not as readily available as they were before the recession of 2008. Banks will want to know every detail of how the loan will be spent, and many banks will not loan to a first-time business owner who does not have a proven track record. The Small Business Association also has loans available, but it only loans to entrepreneurs who have been in business at least 2 years and are generating a cash flow. Opportunities exist to obtain funding from people or groups of people who want to invest in businesses in which they have a common interest. Some well-known companies began with angel investors. Angel investors often work individually or in a small group to invest in companies with the expectation that they make a significant percent return on investment. Some may want to own as much as 49% of a company. These angel investors often provide mentorship and may even have customers or partners for the business in which they invest. However, less than 4% of angel investor requests are fulfilled. Venture capitalists also invest in companies, but they often look for specific startups to fund. Venture capitalists have more money and resources, so they prefer stable opportunities that will provide a bigger return. Many times, venture capitalists want to recoup their initial investment within 5 years. Fewer venture capital requests are fulfilled than angel investor requests. One of the newest ways to raise funds is to take your idea to the world, literally. It's called crowdfunding. Sites like Kickstarter or Indiegogo are two of the most common websites on which a business owner can share his or her idea and seek financing from people who want to contribute money toward the startup. Entrepreneurs are expected to provide details about their ventures, basically business plans. Contributors may simply make a donation or promise to buy the product in advance. In many cases, donors are expecting a kickback in the form of a reward, like a small gift. Ensuring you have the funding may feel a bit too scary, even for those who are comfortable with risk. So if you're not ready to go all in and be a full-time entrepreneur, you may want to consider your startup as a side job. In fact, Business Insider named part-time startup businesses is one of the three major innovation trends for 2015. According to entrepreneur Jim Price, who wrote about the trends, starting a business today takes one quarter of the time and one-tenth of the cost compared to 10 years ago. Mobile payments, web-based tools, and cloud storage all contribute to the ease of starting a business. Staying employed while starting a business allows entrepreneurs to test their product or idea and build up cash. On the other hand, starting a business will take up a majority of your time that you are not at your day job. Brandon Turner, who invests in real estate while working a full-time job, breaks down the numbers. Out of 168 hours in a week, your day job takes up a minimum of 40, and you should sleep about 56. This leaves 72 hours to take on a side job and still have a life. Turner suggests that those who start a side job become very efficient and get rid of busy work. Stop spending time on useless emails and phone calls. Eat at home rather than taking time in restaurants. Do whatever you can to cut out unnecessary tasks. He also suggests doing those new business tasks you are best at, or those only you can do. Outsource everything else. Jody Porosky, who launched a startup while working full-time, offers these five tips. Number one, tell your boss and human resources department about your plans. Make sure they will allow moonlighting. And if you are working under a contract, review it. You don't want your employer to claim ownership of your company in the future. Number two, don't let your startup affect your day job. Stay on task and don't burn any bridges. Number three, take time to watch your employer for ideas you can use in your business. Pick up best practices from managers and processes. Number four, eat well and exercise. If you don't have your health, you won't succeed at either job. And number five, your social life will suffer, but do your best to stay connected with close family and friends. You need their support. You may get to a point where you might start to resent your day job, but you are not financially secure enough to leave it. Turner suggests turning negative thoughts and feelings into positive ones. Instead of holding you back, your day job is the reason your dreams are alive. Use it as a motivator to chase what you want in life. And whatever you do, don't do it alone. Rely on others' support. Neil Patel, entrepreneur and angel investor, has found that startups led by co-founders are more successful than those with a single owner. Co-founders provide accountability to each other and bring differing skill sets to the table. Brown suggests that entrepreneurs, whether they are sole proprietors or partners, enlist the help of an advisory board. Boards provide a different perspective and ideas. Board members also act as a sounding board and will give honest feedback. When choosing a board, consider the following. First, choose people you trust who will help you reach your goals. Also, choose people with diverse expertise so that you can communicate with them one-on-one about specific areas of business. And last, consider people who are already advising you and make it official. Business mentors also can be relied on to provide advice, especially when the most important decisions need to be made. Mentors may not even be people you know. The SBA provides an online resource guide titled Steps to Finding a Mentor that outlines organizations and other resources for building a mentor relationship. All of this isn't to say that startup entrepreneurs should not confide in friends and family. Tobeck says entrepreneurs need both mentors and friends in their business life. Mentors will say what needs to be said to keep the business on track, while friends will provide emotional support, saying exactly what entrepreneurs want to hear. It's up to entrepreneurs to tell the difference. Plenty of community resources are also available, including small business development centers, women's business centers, veterans business centers, and SCORE offices. The SBA also offers guides, tools, courses, articles, and quizzes on most of the topics covered in this podcast. So you're determined you have what it takes to be an entrepreneur, and your product is right for the market. You've built a business plan and a budget. You have the financing needed to get started. At this point, Brown offers three pieces of advice. Number one, learn from your mistakes. You will make them, and that's okay. Number two, fail fast and inexpensively. Take small steps toward your goal and reassess your path along the way. And number three, if at first you don't succeed, get out before you lose too much. Careful planning and the right attitude all contribute to being a part of the 10% of entrepreneurs who succeed. If you don't get it right the first time, retrace your path and determine where you went wrong. In business, there is always a chance to get it right the next time.
Thanks for listening to this podcast on how to start a business. Keep on the lookout for our next podcast, Let Employees Take the Stage with Roleplay. If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to listen to others, please visit our website at 4imprint.com/bluepapers.